Previously on the Hot and Cole podcast.
Because of his age, he's not able to move as much as he has in the past or as quickly.
I still haven't got that $25, by the way.
Oh, no. The peanut butter and honey sandwich that I made was the most delicious thing I've ever eaten in my entire life to this day.
Can we get some tacos?
I find this fascinating and extremely important.
And that's a fact, Jack. I say it's go time, man.
Let's go.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Radar.
You already got it going?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
We live.
We live. All the way live.
Well, yeah. Sort of live.
Lakeside. You don't know about that, dude. Lakeside. All the way live.
Why is your copy?
Yours great. I had the...
Different from mine.
I can't remember which one I had first. I had either the black one cover first, but they messed it up.
Mm.
So I wanted them to change. But once they changed it, then I liked it. I know what it was. I changed the blue, but once they changed it, then I liked it. I said, shoot, I should have kept it the way they messed it up because I liked the black and white one better. But anyway. So if you buy one now, it looks like this.
Okay.
Yeah.
To summarize, we're talking today about Robert Radar Holt's novel, Lead Me Not Into Temptation. I can find it on my own. I'm very impressed with anybody who can sit down and put together a story like that.
I sat down for 10 years.
10 years.
That's how long it took for me to write it.
I sent the cover to a friend of mine, and she was like, oh, that's great, cool, that's cool, and whatever. She was just being supportive. And then I was telling her later what the book was about.
Right.
And she goes, oh.
I
didn't get that from the cover. And I thought, well, I think when looking back, I saw kind of the is that Constantine? Or is that just, it's not?
Actually, that's not even the picture I wanted on the book. The picture I wanted on the book, I couldn't get it on there because of copyrights.
Really?
Yeah, it was another. It was like two angels kissing each other or whatever. That's what it was. But they wouldn't let me do that one. So they sent me some pictures, the publishing company, and I kind of scanned. Actually, this is a lady. This is Mary. This is Jesus' mother.
Oh, nice.
That's who it is. It looked like a guy, huh?
An image?
A lot of people thought it was me. They said, is that you on there? I said, no, that's not me. Yeah. But it's a statue of Mary, and that's...
Hey, hold on, man. I'm so sorry. So you were telling me that in the principal's office, you were...
Man, it took me 10 years to write this book.
We're not going
to
mess with your retirement.
No. Oh, I'm good. I got three retirement checks coming in. Somewhere.
Yeah, good.
But anyway, so if you mess with that one, I got two more coming in. So I'm, but anyway. Now, what I would do sometimes, I had my computer turned where when you walk in my office, you can only see the back of it.
Yeah.
You couldn't actually see the front of the computer, so you couldn't see what I was doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what I would do. You know, I'd be in there trying to finish up my novel, and somebody would walk in. I was like, oh, got to shut that screen down and bring up another one.
But so it's a story about, and it took me a while. You know, it's funny how much
complicated, huh?
Yeah,
it's a good, but once it gets going,
like
when you first start reading the book, it goes back and forth, back and forth. But once it stops doing that, and then it just
I do like the time frames, the time stamps that helps you kind of
right. That's why I put them there because I knew it'd be kind of confusing if you know.
Yeah, and it seems to all go in a row, except for every now and then it kind of jumps around.
Yeah,
great opening scene, you know, where you know they're in the car and. Getting hot and heavy, and it's like I can see the kind of thump, you know, and you're looking up, and there's just like dude running down the street, and he's like, "What the heck?"
Right.
And
they're out in the middle of a cornfield.
In a cornfield.
Right. So
And
well, on the side of the road.
Looking back, now then I didn't recognize it, but looking back, obviously Michael knew exactly what he was looking at.
What do you mean? What he was looking at? What do you mean?
Well, when he sees.
Autumn?
No, Constantine running.
No. He didn't. No.
And the reason I thought he may know because of the wink.
Well, at that point, he did.
Yeah.
But when they heard.
Yeah, not the thump, but once he.
Yeah. Somebody was yanking on the door, trying to open the door.
Okay.
And see, it's a reason for everything in there.
Yeah.
All right. The reason that she that he yanked on the door at that specific time was Michael. Let me start back from the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. It's about like three different characters. Okay. Michael, Constantine, and Autumn.
Okay. Right? Wow.
Michael is like a 31. He's 31 year old man. Autumn is a little young. She's like 19 now. 19 now.
Now.
But he had been with her through as a result of the mother.
Yeah.
You know.
Hattie.
Hattie Burrell Savage. And so they had been together, and Hattie wanted to introduce her daughter to Michael because she felt like he was, as far as lovemaking or whatever, he was like top of the line, right?
Yeah.
And she didn't want her to, you know, end up with some little old immature boy or whatever, you know, and she wanted him to, you know, to experience what it was like to be with like a real man or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was her goal, her standards.
So can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk.
Because I'm real curious, you know, maybe this is Mr. Christian conservative guy. I don't know what makes me think this is completely strange. And maybe because we live in a time where technically that's illegal, right? 16 and he would have been 28 at the time.
Exactly.
What made you feel comfortable bringing this type of relationship into?
I just tried to go for, like, first of all, every page, if I told you right now, I said, just throw a number out there, page 36 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
If I go to page 36 and I read it, I mean, it's going to grab your attention. It's going to grab you, right? So I wanted the whole book to be like that. So everything was like.
That makes sense.
I won't say all the way to the extreme.
Yeah.
But I want it to be where it.
It caught your attention.
Yeah, and it caught your
like
attention.
Like I'm doing now, I'm thinking, what is going on?
Right. No, you could have had them the same age, but that would not have been as interesting, you know? So, and honestly, this book, like I told you, for a start, I was just a bunch of jokes, right?
Yeah.
This is like a bunch of jokes. But it was like when, when I was in Buffalo, I had like, it was like 5 or 6 pages I typed out. It might even been back on the typewriter back then. But we were coming from a game, and I let some of the guys read. They were sitting on the airplane. You know, we had the chartered plane. They were sitting on the plane. And, I mean, they were laughing so our tears were coming out their eyes.
Wow.
And one of them said something to the extent that, man, you need to do something with this. And so I just kept building on it. And at one point, I put it away, didn't do anything with it. But like I said, you know, for like a 10-year period.
Wow.
Because I write like jokes all the time. I got so much stuff jotted down. And I tell you what I learned being a stand-up comedian for the short amount of time I did it.
Yeah.
People steal your stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's a thing you hear.
Yeah, they steal your stuff. But see, if I put it in this book.
Oh, it's yours.
Okay? Yeah, you can steal it. But if I got like, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people reading the book, they know that's my joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's mine. So, you know, whereas on the stage.
So that was part strategy there, right?
Oh, yeah. That's one way I get my stuff out, get my material out or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, people attribute that to me rather than, like I said, on the stage. I went to see a show one time, and the dude was up there was doing like most of my routine. I was like, come on, man.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway.
Was it delivery? You know, that's kind of.
What's that, with stand up?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's the.
Oh, it's a whole lot of stuff to factor. Oh. We'll talk about that on another show.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff that factors into that, which I learned real quick. But anyway.
Well, a comedian also needs to be a good writer as well. So that would make sense.
That's like, you don't know who Paul Mooney is, do you? You know who he is?
No.
You know Rich Pryor, right?
Yeah.
Paul Mooney wrote, I'm going to say he wrote most of Richard Pryor jokes, but he wrote a lot of them.
Really?
And people don't know that.
Wow.
You know, a lot of the jokes that Richard Pryor did, they were not actually written by Richard Pryor. Yeah. One I give
that's
you.
That's interesting.
One of his funnest jokes, Richard Pryor was talking about racism, and he was talking about justice. He said, you know, black people, he said, you go to jail looking for justice, right?
Yeah.
He said, that's what you're going to find, just us.
Yeah. You know?
For the long. He didn't write that joke. Paul Mooney wrote that joke. Wow. But I'm just saying, it's, you know, so.
Were they like tight?
Were they like
good, you know, just ran together type deal?
Oh, yeah.
Or yeah, okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He just had the knack for.
It's kind of like Elton John and what's Bernie Tuplin or whatever his name is.
Well,
you know, a lot of people. Elton John never writes any of his song. You know,
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
Nah.
Yeah,
but I've got a record player now, and I got my dad's old records. He's been jamming, man.
A record player.
Yeah, it's cool.
Turntable, dude.
Turntable.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so...
back to the book.
Yeah, Michael... What my statement was, once he had his eyes on Constantine, he knew that was a fallen angel.
Yeah, then. Okay, let me say this. I'm going to give you kind of overview of the book.
All right.
All right, those three characters. What it is, those two guys were, they had died and they went to hell, yeah. Right?
Hell.
They went to hell. And they were upset in the way of deciding who goes to heaven and who goes to hell.
Yeah.
They felt like it was biased or whatever, or it wasn't, you know, they felt like it was unfair. You
aren't
know,
we all a little bit like...
Oh, that's what I was trying to make it true to life. Yeah. You know, for you know, just the way we think, you know, people. But anyway, they were a little disappointed with, you know, how to determine who goes to heaven and who goes to hell, right? So anyway, when they went to hell, the whole time they went to hell, they were disgruntled. They was upset, you know, with the devil, da-da-da, all that kind of stuff. And he finally got tired of listening to them complain. So what he did was he told them they could go back to Earth, the secular world, they can go back. But they had to go back on one condition. They could not violate any of the Ten Commandments or any of the seven deadly sins.
Wow.
If they did, what would happen? They would be cursed. And what their curse would be was their worst fear. Whatever they feared the most, magnified tenfold.
Wow.
All right. So that's what happened. Basically what the devil was doing, first of all, you don't get to die. You don't go to hell and then get a second chance of going to heaven. So he's just messing with them.
Yeah.
What he's hoping will happen is they will go back, and once they realize, he already know they're going to falter. And once they do, and you know, this curse hits them, they have to endure this curse, right? What he's knowing is going to happen is, then you will appreciate me.
Yeah.
You'll appreciate being here in hell with me, because it's going to be 10 times worse, you know, what you're going through on earth, which is like it is for some of us,
sure,
you know, than, you know, what it is, you know, here in hell. So anyway, so they go back, and sure enough, they do, they falter.
And they both, you know, I picked up on it, but Michael is a fallen demon, angel, returned from hell.
They don't even know. They think they're like angels because they have these wings and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So they don't even really. They. So he's trying to. What happens in the part you're talking about? Autumn and Michael in the beginning of the book, in the, you know,
car,
in the backseat of the car, and it's getting all steam and everything, right? And right as they're getting ready to do something, you know, become intimate again or whatever, someone yanks on the door.
Yeah.
And what it is, it's Constantine. He's been chased by these bunch of misfits.
Yeah.
And these people that were like in the circles, right? You know, the big strong man, little midget, all these people.
Yeah.
So what they had been doing, they had him as like part of the freak show.
Sideshow.
Yeah. Because, you know, he had these wings on his back.
Yeah.
You know, they would pass him off as like he's part pheasant and part human.
Part,
you know,
bird.
Right. So.
The bird human. Come and see.
So anyway. They, but it was good. The reason that he intervened, he really saved Michael, because Michael wanted to be the greatest poet in the world.
Yeah, that was
all right. But in order to become the world's greatest poet, what had to happen was the people that he loved the most, his loved one, they had to die. They had to die like a horrific death.
Yeah,
right. And whenever they did. That's what gave him the inspiration to write. He was just going to like this deep spiral, downward depression or whatever. And he would just come out with like these poems that were like just better than anybody that ever written.
Do you frame that as this was predetermined, that, or was that just simply his best writing? The deaths of his loved ones.
No.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, did his loved ones just die?
No. And this is the devil doing this. This is the curse. The devil is doing it. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you how the devil did it. But, so Michael was real reluctant to show love to someone.
Yeah.
Like Autumn or whatever, because he knew if he did, what was going to happen? She was going to be one that would die. In order to give him the inspiration, he needed to write the poems he needed. So when they were in the car, that's why he was really... being resistant, because he did love her, But he was trying to fool the devil and trying to make it look like he didn't love her because he didn't want her to be one of his sacrifices, right? But what the devil did, and the devil was upset. The devil, he said, I gave you everything you wanted. Like the opening scene, it talks about Michael's wife being decapitated. Yeah. You know what that was, the symbolism was behind that?
Nuh-uh.
She was beheaded. Her head was, for the most part, she was beheaded.
Yeah. Now, I don't.
It's a little raunchy, so.
Okay.
It was one of his, it was one of his vices.
Very, okay. Nice.
He said, I'm giving you what you want.
Yeah.
That's what you like, so here's your wife's head.
Wow.
On a silver, he said, I couldn't give it to you on a silver platter, but it was on concrete. He said, that's the closest I could come to gray or whatever, you know.
That's the one of those things we're talking about, the movie part of it, how that could be, you could show that, how cool that would be.
Every death was a symbolism.
Oh, man.
You didn't pick up on that, did you?
No, I did a little bit. Like, you could, again, that's deep, man. That's hard. That's real hard.
Like the cat.
Remember
the cat that died from a rare flesh-eating bacteria?
No, so that was early on then.
Okay.
Dang it.
The uncle that died from gout.
Yeah.
His name was Richard.
Yeah, I remember the uncle.
You remember that?
Yeah, I remember dying from gout. All these have symbolism, huh? Dang.
Well, short for Richard. I just leave it there.
Yeah, sure enough. So what about the cat then?
He died from flesh-eating bacteria.
Oh, man. I'm picking up on
I'm trying not to go too far.
Yeah.
But everything, the devil's messing with him. He's like, I've given you everything. All these insecurities of whatever you had, you know, and what you always wanted, you expired.
Man.
I'm giving them to you. He's being sarcastic, basically, is what he's doing.
You know, and that's my thing. Not that, because literary things, I like them. But I don't pick up on them. You have to explain them to me. Yeah. You know, so I'm reading it, and I can guess.
If you go back, once we finish
talking
about the book, you go back and read, you're going to be like, the light bulb is going to start going off.
Well, I started rereading it.
But you didn't, but still,
But I stopped, and I said, let me, because I'll have a good talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I read it, I'll be all over it.
So you're with me so far, right?
Yeah.
All right, so that's what happens. So anyway, when they're out in the field, what happens is, these guys are chasing Constantine from the circus.
Yeah.
And they throw a rock and they render him unconscious, hit him in the head with a rock. He fell down. But anyway, before that, Constantine had tried to get away. He had tried, when he yanked on the door, it scared Michael and Autumn so bad. They were like, oh, scared Autumn half to death.
Yeah.
And scared Michael to a certain extent also, because at that time, he didn't know what was going on, right?
Nah, he's caught up in that moment, too.
Yeah. It wasn't. Until Constantine tried to spread his wings and fly away. And he couldn't fly away because they had clipped his wings. He couldn't fly. Yeah. So when Michael saw his wings, he was like,
It all came.
Not all of it. Because Michael had gone through the same thing. When he had come back from hell, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Same thing. He had wings also. But once he faltered, his wings started to decay, and eventually he lost his wing. Now, let me say this.
His main
thing as far as the whole book is concerned, he wants to talk to God.
Yeah.
All right? That's what he wants to do.
Yeah,
he wants to talk to God. He wants to ask God for a second chance to be able to go to heaven, da-da-da, and all that kind of stuff. So he knows that he's faulted. Chances are, he meets Ubiquitous, the pharmaceutical salesman, who Ubiquitous has met this lady, this voodoo priestess, who they came up with this concoction where they can give it to you, and it gives you a near-death experience. Yeah. You know how people say when you die, you see the light, right? Yeah. Okay.
Ayahuasca, I think that's a thing.
You know what
that? Ayahuasca is a thing that people do.
Right, and so you see
they
the light.
Like, yeah.
So that's what Michael wants. He wants to be able to, take whatever this potion is or whatever so he can have a near-death experience so he could see the light so he can talk to God. But what he knows may not happen for him, and the reason being is because he's already faulting and his wings are gone. So when he sees Constantine, and he looks at him as if he's still in his pierced state, right?
Yeah.
So he feels like the people would have a better chance of giving him an opportunity. Constantine may be going, talk to God because he's still like in an angelic state.
Yeah.
But Michael has questions. He said, I've got all these questions. If you talk to God, I want you to ask God
on my behalf. Yeah.
Right?
For.
So that's why he gets all excited. Now, let me see if you picked up on this. When, do you remember what Michael said to Constantine, when he walked up, when Constantine landed in the field, he was unconscious. He threw a rock in the head. Michael walks over there to him. You know, he had the gun shot, so the other people ran away. And he walks over there to Constantine, who's laying in the middle of the field. Do you remember what he called Constantine?
No, because I remember. I remember all that. I just, you know, the exact words he used.
He called him a house, the N-word.
Yeah, yeah, N-word. Yeah.
Do you know why?
Skin color.
No. Yeah, he was albino. Yeah, Constantine was albino.
Right, that's why.
But that's not why. The reason he called him that. Go ahead.
I got questions. So I'm making assumptions, because of the author, that they're black. But does that matter? Okay.
I wrote him as a black character.
Yeah, as a black character. And he's then Constantine, a black albino.
Right.
That's interesting.
Right,
yeah. Okay.
But the reason that he called him that is because he recognized him. They had been in hell together at the same time.
Wow.
And Constantine was the devil's right hand man.
No way.
Right? So and that's what they called Constantine when he was in hell. They called him House.
Yeah.
The N word, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense. You know, because like I said, he did all the dirty work for the devil and that is kind of, but at one point these guys had kind of fooled themselves.
He knew him.
Yeah, he knew him. Yeah. And so right away he wanted to grab him, put him in the car and take him, and you know, didn't want anybody else to know who he was. Cause like I said, his ultimate thing is he wants to be able to talk to God. And he feels like Constantine has a better chance. Like these village elders or whatever, you know, they're not going to just give anybody the near-death experience if they don't feel like they have a chance talking to God. But they're like, hey, this dude still got his wings there. He's in angelic state. But see, even with that, see, they fooling themselves because you're a fallen angel. They don't even see themselves as fallen angels. They just see themselves as angels, right?
Wow.
So
interesting.
But, oh, that's good. So they take. Go
so,
ahead.
So he takes Constantine back to his mom's house.
His mother's house. She has a house in behind her house.
Yeah.
That you know, empty. No one staying there. The uncle was the last one that stayed there. Yeah. You know, that type thing. And he feels like he can hide him out there, and no one will know. The only person knows he's there is Autumn.
Yeah.
So, but in the meantime, Michael has continues to do his
poetry. Yeah, he's got things he's got
to
do.
His poetry. He's trying to become the world's greatest poet. And at one point, he has to leave to go to a reading, right? And
these poems are from the death of his wife, right?
From the death of his wife.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the uncle.
Yeah.
You know, his cat. You know, wow. It's a lot of, you know, that's where he's getting all this inspiration from. But so anyway, he has to leave, and I can't remember right now where the first one. I know one was in Belize. They had to go to Belize for poetry reading or whatever, like this world international poetry.
Well, there was one.
No, it was one local. It was local.
Yeah, the local one I feel like is the one where, you know, I'm still kind of getting going, trying to read your book. You know, I'll read some, then I put it down, then I read some more and put it down.
Right.
And so up to that point, I was still kind of trying to
figure out, kind of navigate
going on and how to read it.
Okay.
And a little bit after that is when I started like streaming it and reading. I read for an hour or two at a time.
Okay.
And so what was interesting is during that time, I felt, is when he met Ubiquitous and then the lady with the Adam's apple.
That was at the strip club. That was talking about?
No. Well, that was that was a good one, too.
That was funny, huh? That's where I put my best jokes in.
Your best jokes in.
But I think I went a little too far with some of the jokes.
Dig.
So some people are like, oh, wait a minute. What?
That's good. No, did he have a meeting with the devil early on? Or meeting with?
Oh, you're talking about, yeah. The first book review they went to.
Yeah, the first book review.
Yeah.
So that's where I was kind of like trying to pick up on some things.
You good. I'm trying to think of it. I can't remember the name of my kid. It'll come to me in a minute.
I want to go back and read that part of it because. Yeah.
What did the devil say to him the first time? He's, you don't remember? He said something about eating cake.
Really?
You don't remember that?
So basically he gets his. He gets recognized. They say, we want you to keep doing this.
Yeah, and all these people, all these publishing companies are coming out to offering
him. Meanwhile, he's got Constantine at his house.
And Autumn is there.
And Jules is in and out.
Oh, my God. Jules is Rich Pryor. Jules, that's who I gave all my Rich Pryor jokes to.
That's awesome.
Jules is a fool, I'm going to tell you. He, But that's where he, Jules, they peeking, you know, they trying to see what's going on in the room. And she was, you know, trying to, her thing is, now this is Autumn.
Yeah.
She's, all of them are sad characters, right?
Yeah.
Autumn's thing is she just wanted love. She just wanted to be loved.
Yeah.
You know, her mother messed her up.
Yeah,
you know,
big time.
Yeah, you know, inviting,
setting her
inviting her
an older
bed.
Man.
Yeah, all that kind of, yeah. Well, they went in bed together. So all three of them, her mother and her, and you know, all three of them in the bed together.
That's crazy.
So a mother can mess up. It happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, she just wants to be loved. She just wants to, like, pure love, right?
Yeah.
So she's, and she doesn't understand why Michael, who is the only person up to that, well, no, I won't say that. I was her first lover.
Yeah.
But she's been with other people since then, because yeah, she's been trying to
fill that void.
Fill that void, and she hadn't been able to do it. But anyway, she doesn't understand why Michael won't love her. Michael does love, but he can't love her because, like I said, if he does,
she'll die.
She'll die.
Wow.
And she will be, so he can't, and he can't tell her that, so he can't love her.
That's a good one.
But anyway, Constantine's curse is the one. But anyway,
yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But so that's why she goes out. She sees Constantine as an angel. Right?
Pure, yeah, pure. Sure.
So she figured out, okay, not just albino, yeah, got his wings on. But she's like, well, now, this guy, you know, he has to love me. I mean, that's him. That's, he's an angel, you know. So she feels like he won't, you know, mistreat a dog out or whatever, like Michael or whatever. He has to love. So that's why her focus shifts from Michael to Constantine. So he, when he's leaving her, when he goes off, you know, overseas and all that kind of, well, where else? Belize? I can't remember where it was.
Yeah, well, one of them was definitely Belize.
Yeah. So when they go off and he leaves
them together,
Constantine and Autumn.
Yeah.
And Autumn ends up seducing Constantine.
Yeah.
And that's when he falters.
That's his falter.
That's when his wings started decaying.
So that makes sense. That was definitely his falter. What is that deadly sin or commandment?
What's his
lust?
What heels?
No, not his curse.
No, I'm gonna tell you.
But what did he do that broke his pact?
Yeah, lust. One of the seven deadly sins, right?
Yeah.
So, but what?
So Michael's already passed okay,
well,
that's what makes the difference.
He also had been partly responsible for the death of his stepdad.
Yeah.
You remember, stepdad had an asthma attack or whatever.
He didn't get him.
He didn't kill him.
Yeah.
But when he dropped his inhaler on the ground, Michael covered it with his foot.
Wow. Yeah,
so stepdad looking for him. So in a way, you are kind of responsible for it. So he had already kind of faltered from grace. And then when he was intimate with Autumn, when she was a young girl, that too. So he had a few things.
Yeah.
That's why he, you know. But
they're just scars on his back. There's not wings
right.
That was happened a long time ago.
just the scars on his back. And he knows, like, the duration, the time period, how long Constantine has
to remain.
So he needs to hear him.
Hurry up.
And let's get to Hades or whatever, so we can, you know, do this near-death experience.
So one of those trips is when Constantine and Autumn hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think on the same trip, his daughter died.
Yeah, he takes his daughter with him. So birthday. Jezebel. Jezebel.
Yeah, they harvested her organs.
Oh, yeah. All right, you bring me back to the daughter, all right?
All right, okay.
Because I want to talk about Constantine and his career. What Constantine is dealing with, when Constantine was young, he was raised in a Catholic church, right? He was abused.
He was
sexually abused at the Catholic church. So he's been kind of messed up. So his worst fear was being homosexual.
Yeah.
All right? So anyway,
because that is forced on him at such a young age.
At a young time. And the sad part about it is he always, because he didn't do anything to the person that abused him or whatever.
Yeah, it didn't
pop. He always questioned why didn't I, but it was because he was a young kid. He didn't know, but still he didn't see it that way, you know.
Interesting.
So I mean, he wasn't gay.
Yeah.
But he didn't know
that
he wasn't.
He's
gay.
Just so confused.
He was
so
real confused.
He don't know.
So that was his worst fear.
Yeah.
So his worst fear ended up being tenfold. Was he had to survive in order for him to survive? The devil really.
Yeah. So let me frame this better, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Once he faltered, Mm-hmm. He faltered and broke his pact with the devil by lusting with Autumn.
Autumn, right.
His curse then for lusting with Autumn was...
his worst fear.
Yeah, first off, he didn't know it. It was his worst fear.
Right.
He didn't know it. He's eating. He can't hold anything down. His wings are falling off. Next thing you know, he realizes he has to ingest semen.
Right.
In order to live.
In order to survive. His worst fear. His
worst fear.
Magnified tenfold.
So, it. You know, I like the writing that's... it seems like such an extreme thing that, and that's what it did. I'm like, what the heck? Like, what's going on here? So the writing was well.
Did you like the way I wrote it though? The style, the way it flowed and everything?
Yeah, I think so. And I really appreciate the shorter chapters because sometimes if I got like the few of the chapters that was really long, luckily I was in power mode. I was powering through them.
Okay.
But whenever I was trying to kind of get going, those shorter chapters helped a lot.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That's good.
Yeah, for me anyway.
Okay.
The shorter chapters help because it's stopping points as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if I'm reading 20 pages,
yeah,
a 20-page chapter, what point can I stop?
Right.
And if I'm not stopping, I'm forcing myself through it, and I'm not,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the chapter markers are really a good stopping point anyway.
Man, I had some people that read my book, and they read so much into it. They were telling me stuff that they didn't even. Why did you choose these certain names and da da da? Honestly,
no, I got a lot.
I'm just saying they were telling me stuff that I didn't even know.
Yeah,
you know. And I had who was it? Somebody was telling me how it changed their life. I'm trying to remember who that person was.
No way.
Well, I know it was Officer Moore. He was supposed to be in here today, but anyway.
Nice.
Yeah, he was like, man, it really made you think. You know what the premise behind the whole thing was? This, and then we get back to the daughter, Jezebel. People waiting for Jesus to come back, right?
Yeah.
You know, people say, wait, a lot of people just be blowing smoke. You know, but a lot of people, you know, when Jesus comes back, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, right.
Seriously, what are you going to do? If Jesus walked through that door right now, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a song about that.
I'm just saying. But what got me to that point was, and that's why I was, you know, like them coming back as angels and all that kind of stuff. But what got me to that point, it was a preacher. It was a church. And their pastor had died or whatever. I don't remember what happened. Anyway, he left or something. I don't know. But anyway, the position was vacated, right? So... people would still come to church, but they didn't have a pastor. You know, they had the minister that comes in and takes his place until, you know, they get the real one, right? It was a homeless man, and, you know, they wouldn't even let him in the church.
Yeah.
And they make him sit outside the church. When he come in, they make him sit on the back pew, and people are rude to him, all that kind of stuff. So one Sunday, they go to church, and this guy, the homeless guy, gets up, and he just starts walking up toward the front of the church. Everybody looking like, really, dude? You know. So when he gets up to the front, he gets the mic, and he tells the congregation, he says, I'm your new pastor.
Yeah, boy.
He said, I'm your new pastor. Kind of like, you know, Jesus coming. Yeah. He said, I just want to tell you about, talk to you briefly about the way you all have been with me.
You know,
how rude and disrespectful you were to me, all that kind of stuff. And he said, it's not about you coming to church every Sunday. It's about how you treat people, how you interact with people. He said, we're not even going to have church this Sunday. He said, I'm going to send everybody home. He said, when you come back next Sunday, he said, you got a whole week. I want you to think about the way that you treated me. Your new pastor, I want you to think about the way. And so I always had that in the back of my mind when I was writing this book. Wow. So that has a lot to do with it.
That's interesting because with respect, I saw pushing the limits on everything. I didn't see.
Yes, I did.
I didn't see reflection on love and togetherness, and so what did I miss there? You know what I mean, like
on love and togetherness.
Well, you know, like treating people right and so forth.
No,
right?
No. What happens? Yes, you do. What happens is, like, even with Michael.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be the greatest poet in the world. You know.
Yeah.
And at one point, Michael, he hits a lull. You know, a writing block. He can't come up with any poems or whatever, right?
No tragedy.
He actually longs for it. He wants something. He's in his mind. He's thinking, well, who could be my next sacrifice? I mean, this is how twisted his mind has gotten. You know, who could be my next sacrificial lamb?
Especially over time, right? Like when you're in that lull and you're thinking, you know where it comes from.
Right. Who can be my next sacrifice?
And hey, who could be the next one that's not that bad, right? Like,
well, he told his mother. Remember he told his mother? He said... He feared that his mother would be next, And I don't know if you remember this part or not, but his mother told him, she said, nah. She said, she knows what's going on too.
Yeah.
And find out later in the book. And the reason why, she was born blind, right?
Yeah.
She was born blind. So, and actually, she could actually see more than people who.
Evelyn Potts?
Yeah. She could see more than people who actually had their vision. And she knew. Michael never knew that. You know, that she, and I can't remember what it was when she went there, but she was there just briefly. I can't remember the reason why. But anyway, he was telling her that she would probably die, but he was telling her, she said, no. She said, because you don't love me. That was his own mother.
I remember that.
And she said the reason why is because when you were raised, you know, you're upset because she said she allowed his stepdad to discipline him, and Michael never got past that. And she was saying that, you know, it was just the opposite. The reason I allowed him to discipline you or whatever, because I did love you and I didn't want you to grow up to be this heathen or whatever. So, you know, but anyway, but like I said, he got to the point where he actually longed for, you know, someone that, but back to your question, you was asking me about love, like at the end of the book, when he finally does accomplish, he's the world's greatest poet.
Yeah.
But all the people that he loved are no longer there.
No longer there.
You know, you did it. You sacrificed all the people. So it's, you know.
Yeah,
so
shows, I see.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about love. Love is not, you know, it's not worth sacrificing.
No. Yeah. Him being number one is not worth sacrificing all those important relationships in his life.
Yeah. The most important thing in your life is your relationship with the people you love.
Yeah, man.
And you sacrificed
all that for success.
And now at the end, look at you.
Mm-hmm.
And what I remember they had, who was it? Billie Holiday, the movie, was it Mahogany? I can't remember what it was. One of the movies Diana Ross was in, and Billy Dee Williams said something about, what is love, what is success, love, da-da-da, all that kind of stuff, without somebody to share it with.
Absolutely,
and that's what it,
man.
You had nobody to share it with.
I like that.
You want to go back to Jezebel, the dog?
Yeah, because that was surprising. I'd moved on.
I told
on.
You, boy, I was, yeah.
I mean, it would just happen. I was like, whoa. And so he goes to Belize. They're there. He's getting ready for a poem. He's talking to her. Okay, honey, you know, when I get back from my deal, we'll go out and do this and that or whatever. Mm-hmm. I forget. And
they were out and about.
Yeah, he's out and about.
She kind of wandered off.
Okay, that was what?
She wandered off, and he couldn't find her. And remember, they were riding around looking for her. They were riding around looking for her. And what happened was one of the guys that he was with, I forgot who it was he was with. Might have been a police officer, somebody. He was like, and that's your daughter?
Yeah.
And it was another guy carrying her. And what happened?
Hey!
Let me go back. Another symbolism. The devil at one point, when he came in that lobby, he met Michael at his first reading. And he was telling him, you know, he said, why do you dislike me so much? He said, I've given you everything you wanted. He was telling about how, you know, everything he wanted, he'd given it to him. You know?
Yeah.
And one of the last things he said, I also know that you like, I don't know if I can say this. He said a young piece of, you know. But anyway, another word for ass is a mule, right?
Yeah.
Michael didn't pick up on it.
Oh, mule, yeah.
Michael didn't pick up on it. So what it was, he was actually talking about his daughter. His daughter became a mule.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, like they train, you know, when the guy dropped and she fell to the ground and they saw where, you know, she had been cut open, you know, and all the organs had been taken out, and they had replaced her body she was a mule.
That's Michael cool, man.
So the devil is giving him all, he's saying, everything you want, I'm giving it. But he's being sarcastic, right? But he just messed with me. But like I said, the devil's ultimate thing was, okay, y'all don't appreciate me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
You're
like,
about to.
Yeah. You're gonna crawl back to me, which like at the end of the book, pretty much is what
sure
happens.
Enough. So he starts writing after that, writes the
He wasn't going to.
Yeah.
He did not want to use his daughter's death.
Yeah.
You know, as another opportunity to write poems. But these poems just started. You know,
didn't he write a bunch?
Oh man.
Trying to use his own.
And they weren't any good.
And they sucked, yeah.
Yeah, they weren't any good.
Yeah.
But when his daughter died, he started writing all these poems, which really about as low as you can get.
Yeah.
Because he'd use his daughter's, the death of his daughter, to also write another manuscript.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So, Constantine is gone.
He's
gone. We can't find him.
Yeah, he ends up leaving. Because now he, curse, he has to, this is what he has to do in order to survive. And he tries to eat food and he throws it up. He tries to.
Well, hold on. So,
they went to the funeral. Yeah, so, daughter's funeral.
So
Jezebel's funeral.
Constantine was at the funeral. I thought that was a good scene. But he's like in the background.
Which funeral?
Jezebel's funeral.
Yeah, yeah. Stay in the background.
And Michael then hooks up with Autumn in the limousine. Constantine is there.
Yeah.
And that was a pivotal point because.
Can I say something about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the opening scene?
Where they're hooking up?
Well, she was talking about a birthday suit.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And she was talking about, about venues going through the back door, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Michael knows her.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, even though Constantine, you know, has been with her and they were with her like for 3 days while Michael was away and whatever.
Was in a way, yeah.
Michael knows her.
Yeah.
He knows her. So. You know, so. When they were in the limousine, I don't know if you remember the scene. I'll let you read it again. But anyway, they were intimate with each other in front of Constantine.
That was the kicker.
In front of Constantine. Did it on purpose.
I didn't see them as together.
You didn't see who was together?
Constantine and Autumn. So I didn't realize at that point that he felt so offended.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And part of this is me just because you... You know, just hooking up like that doesn't mean you're like in a loving relationship or whatever, right? Maybe it is to some, maybe, right? But that's the reason I didn't necessarily see that first, and later on I realized that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She took him.
So Michael did it just because he's a guy and she's a girl, and
Michael really loved her.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did. And he really wanted to be with her.
Yeah, he did.
But he couldn't be with her because he didn't want her to die.
Yeah.
But he didn't want her to be with somebody else.
Yeah. So did he intentionally?
Oh yeah.
In front of him make him. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, he was upset also because when he left,
that's when it happened.
Yeah, he left. Not only was he upset that Constantine and Autumn had been together, he was also upset because he wanted Constantine to remain pure. Because he's still trying to get him
to talk to so he
could, you know,
talk to God.
Near death experience. And he's really upset now. He comes back and now his wings are stored. You can smell the like mange.
That's good, man.
Yeah, and he's like, really? You know, he like.
So to frame it better, not only is he mad that they hooked up,
yeah,
he's with the girl that he loves.
Right.
He's mad that he saved him to keep him pure.
And
hooking up with Autumn pissed him off because he likes Autumn and took away the reason he saved him.
He told Autumn that before he left. He said, he told her, when Jules and the mother were peeking and she was trying to kiss him or whatever.
Yeah.
The first time he's unconscious, and she told him, she said, well, I don't know if you kiss him or not, but you can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, don't mess with him. Leave him alone. You know, he didn't tell her why, but.
I just, you know, reading it's tough, but I can't wait to see Jules live.
I can't wait to see that character. I got a buddy of mine, Rob Riddick, played me in Buffalo. He's already cast the whole.
Oh, yeah?
Who did he pick? I can't remember who he picked for Jules, but. He already cast
the whole thing.
The whole, yeah, all the characters.
That'd be fun, man.
Yeah.
That would be the great comic relief.
What's his name?
And then so.
The black guy name supposed to do the new James Bond? Not James Bond?
I don't know.
Idris Elba.
I'm not very good at pop culture.
Idris. He that's who's Michael.
That's cool.
Yeah, Idris. Terrence Trent D'Arby. Constantine. What's the girl name? I can't think. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
He already cast everybody.
So I think that's when he sees Autumn with Michael, and the curse is kicking in, and he's just like.
Remember they leave?
Yeah, at this point is like downhill.
Remember the house? They go to the vacant house or whatever.
Yeah.
And Constantine is.
Well, that's what I was going to say is like, that's kind of what I was leading to. So. This begins the separation of multiple days, if not weeks, right? Constantine's gone.
Yeah.
And Michael's just going about.
He's trying to survive.
And they're spent there every day. They're looking for him, right? Mm-hmm. They're hooking up. Not hooking up, but like going out and trying to find him. And then Michael and Autumn end up not being looking together. They may be looking on their own, but they're just kind of avoiding each other as well. And then they find someone find Constantine. No,
the, you remember the church scene?
Yeah.
When Constantine in the church with the devil? Remember he wanders into the church?
Yeah.
And the devil is sitting right there next to him, and
he explains to him what's
he's praying on his knees, you know, to God, and the devil's like, dude, why are you praying to God? You belong to me.
Belong to me. And that's, and the devil explains to him what's happening to him.
Right. And not only does he explain what's happening to him, what else? You don't remember?
No.
Constantine feeds.
Oh, from the devil. From the devil?
You don't remember that point?
Maybe I did. I remember that. I just, you know, maybe I just didn't click.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
He resists. He doesn't want to, but he can't help it. That's in order for him to survive. You know.
And so he's ultimately found not at the church, like at a house next to the church, right? I think is where
the strip club.
No, they find Constantine.
Oh yeah. Where they?
Okay, so before that. Before they find him, Mike goes to the strip club and meets is it Surreal?
Wayman. Wayman. I know a guy when I was growing up. It was his name, Wayman, Wichita Falls, Texas. Wayman, W-A-Y-M-O-N-D. But anyway, that's his cousin.
Yeah.
And it's kind of good because all this he's been going through, and then they go through and they start, you know, having some drinks and laughing. And it's like one joke after another. And,
That scene more than any others, and also because I was more focused.
It was jokes in there. Just wanted, like the
waitress and
the stripper dancing to what's the shuffle song? I can't even think of the name of it. I can't even think of it.
That's interesting.
Not the Harlem Shuffle, but whatever it is.
That's interesting. You don't.
Pole dislodged from the ceiling. Yeah. The ones when she fell into the table.
Yeah.
The one with the tattoos. Remember that tattoo?
Yeah, they were tattooed. The face of.
He said, I've seen you before somewhere. And he was like, oh. He said, okay, I've seen people have tattoos of their kids on their arm, but on your breast.
I think that played out on a scene would be fun.
Oh yeah.
I mean, reading it's like okay, but that's built for a scene of visual. Two people. Yeah.
Visual. All the visual. Oh, it's funny. That's funny.
It'd be like a lot.
That's some of my best jokes.
So I think through that he kind of gets the clue or the hint of where to look. Right? No.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to think that link.
Oh no, I know what it was. Jewels. No, that was Autumn.
Because later that day, he then goes home and sees the guy playing dominoes.
Oh yeah,
and he talks to Jules.
Yeah, talks to
a little bit, a little bit more serious conversation with Jules, but it still is funny.
It's funny, Jules. Yeah. Jules is a fool.
Oh man. Yeah. Okay, and then he goes and I think he actually grabs Autumn, or does he run into Autumn and takes him? And they went to that house and found Constantine.
Right.
And that's when Autumn gets food from Michael and gives it to Constantine.
I just leave it.
That was the best explanation of what happened.
I'll leave that right there. Excuse me. Yeah. I'll leave that right there. But
I admire her willingness to help out.
she did. You know, she was trying to keep Constantine. She couldn't bear to watch him.
Oh yeah.
Go through the withdrawals and the pain and everything, and she knew that's what he needed in order to survive. So,
and at that point, Michael and Constantine start meeting.
Yeah, like once a
What was really weird is Michael helps the boy pee.
No, you skipping part before you even get to that.
Not Michael Constantine, but anyway, yeah.
But I was the part you leaving out. The funeral and all that kind of stuff, because I was about the ending. Remember, you was asking me about the ending.
Okay, yeah.
And you remember when Autumn dies, right?
Oh yeah.
And you was asking about the ending.
She kills.
But what happened was, now I'm not going to say that. What?
Nothing. I almost kind of.
It has to do with the gun. It has to do with the gun.
Okay.
Yeah, remember when they bought the gun? They bought the gun. What was the stigma attached to the gun? That's what you need to go back and.
It wouldn't automatically.
It had two bullets in there.
And that was it. You couldn't put any more.
Couldn't put any more now.
Yeah.
Couldn't take them out.
It was a 38 special caliber.
Right.
And it's two bullets.
And what was the stigma attached to it? Why the guy at the pawn shop told me, said the guy got like a voice or something here, and was telling him that one bullet was for my oldest son, and the other bullet was for the other one, to silence the voice of the younger one, something like that. So they went to the
prison again.
So one bullet, you remember when he was at the funeral, and Autumn's dad confronted Michael, you know, because he was upset. He confronted him, you know, because he felt like he was partially responsible for his daughter dying. And then Jewels intervened. They fell to the ground. The gun fell out of the boot. And the dad picked it up. And what did he do with the gun?
He shot
him point blank.
Yeah.
One bullet was for the oldest son.
Golly.
Okay, so only one bullet left in the gun, right? So anyway, when you go to the ending, the very last
scene,
sentence in the book.
Yeah.
That should tell you, you know. And what happened was, I'm trying to read it now. You can read it.
No, I'm not. The last sentence.
What tells you, you're talking about when he's going to the restaurant and the little boy had to pee. And so what happened was.
I totally skipped.
The dad got up and he went off to go get food. And the little boy had to pee.
Yeah.
And he's about to pee on himself. And Michael Constantine was already going to the restroom. And the boy couldn't get his pants unzipped. Yeah. So, and I can't remember. It was totally innocent. Constantine didn't do anything.
Yeah,
when the dad, he was just, you know, trying to help the little boy. But anyway, so when the dad comes in, he sees it. Okay, he runs. He doesn't know what's going on. So he beats up Constantine.
Yeah.
You know, beat him up. So anyway, he ends up going back.
A week.
It's basically like, what they call it, like you get a police officer to shoot you or whatever. What they call it? Death by?
Suicide by cop.
Yeah. That's basically what he was doing.
Wow.
He knew that if he went back to the restaurant, he saw that man again.
Yeah.
You know, he ran away the first time.
Yeah.
He knew it more than likely what was going to happen. And that's, so it was like.
So he kind of went in there to.
Yeah. He was, at that point, he was like.
Yeah.
Wow. Life was just unbearable. He couldn't.
Well, that's a good explanation. I kind of was wondering why that was included.
Yeah.
Just that story period, but because it's getting us in Michael's state of mind.
Constantine's,
yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
Constantine's state of mind, that he's just ready to.
He's done with it.
Yeah.
And Constantine had always wanted to read Michael's poems. Remember that? Michael never would let him read them for whatever reason, right?
Yeah.
So when he dies, what does he do? You remember what he did?
Burns the manuscript and
best manuscript he'd ever written. And his agent got upset with him because he set him on fire. And he took the ashes
and put
from the manuscript, put them in the urn with Constantine's the ashes, and shook him. So he said, "Now they are one."
Yeah,
you know, he always wanted to read my. Now they, you know, so
yeah, he knew him in hell. Then he ran with them here.
Yeah,
interacted so much. And okay, so when I read the end, I guess we're talking about
everybody's gone. Only one left now is Michael.
Yeah. So does the devil pull on himself or to somebody else?
They play Russian roulette.
Yeah.
You know, they sit in the car and Michael, he's just like, whatever. You know, I'm the only one here. He's making all these smart aleck remarks. And the devil's like, you know what? He's like, forget this. He said, you know, he already knew he was going to come back anyway.
Yeah.
And he says, they're going to play Russian roulette.
Yeah.
So what did Michael? Michael says, that looks like my brother's gun.
Yeah, so it tells you.
The devil says it is.
Yeah.
So was it tell you?
Well, that's my, I don't know. I mean, I get
it. You still don't get it, boy?
I'm still there.
How many bullets left in the gun?
One.
What was the stigma attached to it?
It's for Michael.
So it's not Russian roulette.
Well.
That bullet is gone. You remember the devil took the gun? And he said, he just put his head and he pulled a trigger. He like.
Okay,
because he knows
that was the end.
Yeah, he knows that bullet is not meant for him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay. So
then Michael's next, and there's only one answer to that.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I was just making sure I didn't like misread, like, you know.
Only one person got the ending without me telling it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody else was like, okay, I don't get the ending. I didn't get that.
So ultimately, Michael shoots himself.
When he's playing Russian roulette.
Yeah.
And I mean,
to you, how does that apply with him being an angel? Does he just go back to
hell? He never was an angel. He was a fallen angel.
Fallen angel.
Hey, Oh, I know, and one part was, remember when Autumn died, they thought she, no. Was it, oh, yeah, when Autumn died, they thought she died of, they thought she hung herself.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
But when they really looked at it, they found out that it was carbon monoxide poisoning, which is the least dramatic way,
way to go.
Yeah, you die in your sleep and not even know
it,
right?
Remember that.
What does that say? Did that say anything? Remember, all the death was supposed to be horrific. The curse. Horrific. Everybody else died of horrific.
So hers wasn't horrific.
So what does that say?
He didn't need horrific death to write poems?
Maybe not.
Maybe.
Maybe y'all willed all this on yourself. Maybe there never was a curse to begin with.
Yeah.
Maybe this Jules, not Jules, maybe this curse to Constantine.
Maybe he was. He maybe, yeah, man.
You know. And maybe,
I like that. These are things that you willed on yourself.
It kind of throws a wrench in everything that you read up, everything you read up until that point. Now it's like,
that's good, man.
It might not have been a curse at all.
I'm a real big like psychological person and self-analyzation, and I'm a thinker, so I overthink things as well, right? And so I'm always thinking about that, and that's a powerful thing right there. Like,
oh yeah.
Sometimes
I try to relate everything to life.
Sometimes your fear manifests because
you do it. Right. Look at the glass half empty or half filled. You know?
Yeah. Constantine was so scared of being homosexual. That was the worst thing in the world.
Because
that's all
he
constantly thought about it.
Because as a kid, he was abused.
And so that kind of made him feel like, I got to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate it.
Yeah.
But I have to do it. And it's so weird, but that's the way minds.
Right.
You'll trick yourself.
I mean, even Michael, to become the world's greatest poet. Who's to say he couldn't have done that on his own?
Yeah.
You know? Who's to say you had to, you know, when your loved ones died?
Yeah, and you know, honestly, like maybe one tragic death takes you that place,
mm-hmm.
but everyone after that you don't need. Like I you don't experience those bad things until they happen. Like
right.
you can't just manifest.
Then it's like a domino effect,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like one after another and
Good review. I want to keep on that for another few real fast. So, putting together a story like this, like you said, it took you
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah. You know what? The reason it would not have taken me that long. The reason it did because I was
still working.
I was at the high school, assistant principal at the high school, and I never could, like, in order to make something, you know, I would think of something. I said, oh, that's good. But in order for me to make it work, I had to go all the way back and reread the story. And it had to work in chapter 2 in order to work in chapter 32, right?
Yeah.
So I had to go back. So I had to keep that in my head the whole time.
Wow.
But, you know, working as an administrator, I got a parent coming in the next morning, and I'm sitting like, okay, did I do anything wrong? I got to make sure, you know. So I can't constantly focus on my book.
No.
So it wasn't until I retired in 2014 that I was able to just sit down and give it my undivided attention, right?
Yeah.
And it probably took me 9 months after that. I could just really
dive in,
hone in.
Yeah.
And it was all, I kept it all in my head, and I could go back and I, you know, tie up all the loose ends and that type of thing. Because you don't want somebody reading it, you know, you get to the end, they say, okay, well, how can this happen? This not even possible because this didn't happen over here.
Yeah.
So I had to make sure everything, you know, tied up all the loose ends and everything. So that's why it took me. As long as
that's good. You cleaned it. You knocked it out there once you retired. What if somebody listens to this and wants to buy the book? What can I tell them to do?
They can get it on Amazon.
Amazon, nice. Okay.
Yeah, Amazon.
So Amazon's got your book.
Type my name in.
Yeah,
Robert Radar Holden. It'll pull it. Book.
Yeah.
Lead me not into temptation.
I can find it on my own. Hey, what about? Anything else? Any other books you're going to write?
I got
again?
Two poetry books that I'm pretty much finished with.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to come. I got a lot of stuff.
Cool. Yeah.
I got like 2 board games. I got, what else? I've done some other books. I did like a collection of religious short stories. I did.
What is this? Where's this come from?
It's funny because when I was at Baylor.
Yeah.
I probably didn't pass an English class the whole time I was there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I was just lazy. But I remember getting into an argument with one of the professors one time because I wrote a paper and the word was mirror, right?
Yeah.
Like you look in the mirror.
Yeah.
And I spelled it MIROW. And I stood in front of the class and argued with that lady tooth and nail. I was like, she had MIROR. And I was like, man, that don't even make sense. I'm like, no, mirror. You know, that's the way I said it.
Yeah.
I thought she was wrong, you know.
Wow.
But anyway, I don't know. I think my mother, like, she was real creative. She used to do a lot of writing. And, and now, you know, since she's passed and we're going through all the things, I'm running across, like, I probably could do a poetry book on her. Wow. I've come across at least about 10 or 15 poems that she wrote that I didn't even know she had written.
And it seems you've, y'all have passed it on to your daughter. Sounds like.
Oh, man. Brianna?
Yes.
She blew me out the water.
She's just slaying it, huh?
She's writing for the New York Times newspaper. She just did a movie, not a movie, a book deal for a book that she's getting ready to write. And I told her, I said, Brie, I said, and they offer, you know, money to do it. I said, you know how many books I've written? I said, I haven't gotten a dime for either one. Man, you ain't written the book, and they already paying you.
Already paying you.
So, no, she's doing good.
Good.
She's doing real good. Yeah, so.
Well, hey, man, we could talk for another couple hours. That was a good review.
You go back and read my book.
No, I will not.
You will not. It'll mean more to you now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've done that a few times. Matter of fact, these books here that I've got, these are the books I'm reading now.
Oh, okay.
And two of those I'm on my second read. So
okay.
That's
okay.
About to be another.
Okay.
I like to, especially if I can get in read mode,
yeah.
I don't mind knocking them out. But sometimes when I'm not in read mode, I got 10 books I want to read and I'm reading one chapter.
Don't say you do that. Because I would get confused trying to, you know. And with mine, I know mine is not the easiest read, you know. But if you stick with it, you know, the more you read, the better it gets.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to keep it in your head. You have to, because a lot of stuff that, there's a reason for everything in there. I'll put it that way, you know.
Yeah, I think I'd enjoy it second time through.
Oh, yeah, you will.
Well, awesome job, man. It's impressive, and it allows me, you know, you've always been a mentor of sorts through the years, and that opens that to a whole nother dimension. I'm serious. Like I've wrote a few short stories myself just for fun. I don't even know what I was doing. And that makes me want to go back and revisit those and see if there's anything that come out of
know,
it.
Man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'm always wanting to do new things and try new things. And that's why, that's quite exciting. So
well, if I can help you, let me know.
I will, man.
Yeah.
All right, man. We're gonna cut it.
All right, then. See all right, buddy. Hey, boy.